science wasn't always science. Back in the day, when we still called it natural philosophy, it was all pretty loose. People would look closely at stuff, read a few alchemical manuscripts, and then just kind of make things up. Lots of natural philosophers were self-taught, and back then you could be kind of a dabbler, a folk scientist, someone just putting out science singles and seeing what hit. This, of course, meant that lots of natural philosophers and alchemists made their careers promoting things that were utterly incorrect. This still happens a bit today, too, for sure. But over time, we got a little bit better at error correction, at using systems like replication, being open about how the experiments work, and peer review. It all helped make science about what we could test and prove, rather than just a stab in the dark. But it also got harder to be a kind of scientific riffer, just a person with some neat ideas about what was up with reality. But that doesn't mean the riffers went away entirely. Larry Spring was that kind of guy. He didn't have any formal training, but he definitely did have ideas about what might be going on with physics. He also thought the whole field was being made way too complicated with all sorts of unnecessary crazy math. No thanks. So he opened his own physics school, and he jumped at the chance to share his theories.
He made all of these demonstration models to demonstrate basic physics and his theories. And he would hold classes in here where, like, he would beckon people from the front door to come in that were 3 hours long. And if you interrupted him, he would often start over again. You know, I will admit, I'm one of those people. So with Larry, there was a real compulsion to make the invisible visible, so to speak.
Larry Spring passed away in 2009, but his school of common sense physics was turned into a museum. But what do you do with a science museum where the science is kind of folk art, where the brilliance shines bright, but the knowledge shared is maybe not quite right? I'm Dylan Thuris, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Today, we go to Fort Bragg, California, to see the Museum of Common Sense Physics, an homage to a truly curious man. More after this. Rambler Sparkling Water was founded in Austin, Texas, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. I got a couple of cases, and I kind of couldn't get enough of the grapefruit. I could just drink it all day, every day. I ripped through them so quickly. Rambler, you got to send me like 10 more cases. Anyway, to learn more, follow Rambler on Instagram at RamblerAustin, or visit RamblerSparklingWater.com to find out where to buy and to learn more about their conservation partnerships with American Rivers and Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation. Go to RamblerSparklingWater.com. Are you holding back on some travel plans for this holiday break because you are afraid you can't speak the language? Is the language gap holding you back? Well, that is no problem if you have Babbel. Speak like a whole new you with Babbel, which is a language learning app that gets you talking. It's got 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts, and they can get you speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. With advanced speech recognition by Babbel, it's a lot like having a personal language tutor in your phone helping you pronounce anything you need to whenever you open your mouth. So I have been using Babbel to brush up on some Spanish for a trip that we're thinking about taking in the winter to Mexico. And I'm pretty excited to get down there and then bust out some Spanish. And my kids, I think, will be absolutely shocked because I'm pretty sure they don't think I can speak English or most any language. Anyway, here is a special holiday deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for the Atlas Obscura podcast listeners at babbel.com/atlas. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/atlas, spelled BABBEL.com/atlas. Rules and restrictions may apply. Growing up, Larry Spring was always good at making stuff. Larry grew up in the 1920s and used to build crystal radios using oatmeal boxes, wire coils, and galena crystals so that he could tune into the radio signals coming from San Francisco. He lived for tinkering and experimentation. Years later, Larry flew cargo planes during World War II, but even the war didn't stop his desire to experiment. Larry was known for conducting his own tests outside the windows of his plane. He even wrote a poem about them. "I tested streamlining to determine air drag, and among the rest, at 180 miles an hour winds, a teardrop shape was the best. A parachute shape had the most resistance, of course. The ratio turned out to be 10 to 1, which is good for jet engines to apply force." Ever the experimenter and tinkerer, after the war, Larry opened up his own TV repair shop.
After a while, he sort of layered his other hobbies in the shop. So there were all these little carvings that he did out of like found pieces of forest and beach bits and bobs that he would create animals with. He would put paintings in the television shop too. So he sort of museumified the place like on his own, you know, during the 50s.
This is Anne Marine.
I'm the director of the Larry Spring Museum of Common Sense Physics.
Aside from these hobbies, Larry's real passion was for physics. And as I said before, he was not a physicist by education. But he did spend a lot of time thinking about physics and tinkering with the tools in his TV shop, which kind of makes sense because every single cathode ray television set that he was fixing was in fact also its own tiny particle accelerator. So while he fixed TVs, he also experimented. And these were not small experiments. Using TV transmission, Larry said he confirmed the speed of light. He claimed to have developed a new and more accurate model for the atom. And then using that model, simplified the periodic table. And he also had a passion for sharing these new and strange ideas. In the early 80s, he opened up his very own school of physics, which he called the School of Common Sense Physics. See, Larry thought that those academic types, that they were making physics needlessly complicated, just too hard for normal people to understand. But his research was simpler, that his way of explaining physics was easier for normal people to understand. Here is another quote from Larry. "Isaac Newton supplies a solid foundation. Einstein's theories stir the imagination. Maxwell's equations are for engineering. Spring's observations are for understanding." Newton, Einstein, Maxwell. And then, of course, Larry Spring. Here's the thing about Larry's observations about energy and physics. Because he was working alone without training, he was totally outside the modern scientific system. There was no one examining his ideas, pushing back, trying to replicate his methods. He was a true science outsider. At a time when the very definition of science was about your ideas being replicable by your scientific community. And in truth, the little feedback Larry did get was definitely a mixed bag.
I have some archives where Larry had a correspondence with a physicist from Berkeley, where the physicist said, yeah, some of the stuff was right, but other stuff was not.
But Larry was undeterred. His deepest passion remained for trying to translate complex ideas from physics into understandable demonstrations for people to communicate what he loved about searching for these deep truths in physics while tinkering in his TV repair shop. So he wrote these theories into books with this in mind.
A lot of the chapters start with, "I, Larry Spring," like in capital letters. And then there's this whole like sort of folksy take on physics. I mean, it's not, they're not particularly clear, but they're kind of fun to read. He would send those to libraries and universities across the states and some in Canada as well, along with a check for $5 to cover the administration of them being included in the library.
After a little over two decades of running the School of Common Sense Physics, sharing these theories, Larry Spring passed away in 2009 at the age of 94, and the school became the Museum of Common Sense Physics. If you go to the museum today, you will see a lot of Larry's handmade demonstration models, his explanations of them, and the theories that he says they prove. I can't really truthfully tell you one way or the other whether any of what Larry Spring had to say is true. No one's really engaged with it. Probably it's not quite right. And the thing about having a folksy take on physics is that it's no problem to have a folksy take on music or art. When you've got a folksy take on physics, sometimes your lasers explode. But all these big, wild, complicated ideas were also made by one guy using his curiosity and his TV repair shop, which Anne says is kind of the point of the museum.
I think when people walk in, they're attracted to different things in the museum. So some people are here for the physics. Other people are here for the little sculptural objects that Larry made. And others are just sort of apprehended as kind of a curiosity cabinet. So I don't present Larry's theories as true or not true. I think people can make their own judgments around that. And I also think having a little bit of mystery is also attractive.
More than a museum of physics, the Museum of Common Sense Physics is about one man's willingness to follow his own curiosity, fiercely, independently, mistakenly, for his whole life.
I think the fact that Larry dedicated himself to pursuing this form of knowledge is enough, you know, and to go deep into the physics part of it is not really my intention, nor my area of expertise, quite honestly. For me, it is the doctrine of curiosity. So Larry was definitely into the power of observation, and that played out in everything that he did. I would say that that's a comment that a lot of people make, that they're really in awe of his curiosity and his sense of wonder.
Call it art, call it folk physics, call it natural philosophy. It didn't matter to Larry. He was going to do it anyway. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Witness Docs. This episode was produced by
Baudelaire Seuss.
The production team includes
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Willis Ryder Arnold,
Manolo Morales,
Sarah Wyman, Tracy Samuelson,
John Delore,
Casey Holford.
This episode was sound designed and mixed by
Luce Fleming.
And our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I will see you next time.
Witness Docs from Stitcher.
Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
Who likes skipping breakfast? I know I don't, but I like to keep money in my pocket. Thanks to McDonald's, breakfast on a budget has never hit this good. I can grab two McD faves, like a sausage McGriddles, sausage burrito, hash browns, or the savory sausage McMuffin. I can even add a premium roast coffee for $1.69, any size, any time of day, and order ahead in the app so it's ready when I get there. Bite into breakfast without breaking your bank at Mickey D's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.